Hi, I'm Susan Schofer, your certified divorce coach and custody ally. This module is retaliation and how to stay safe. There's a saying that the person that you married is not the same person you divorce, and isn't that so true? Could you imagine when you got married that your spouse and you would end up where you are? Of course not. Nobody ever gets married and assumes that they will get divorced. And hopefully, you want your divorce to go without a glitch, without any bumps in the road, and you surely don't want retaliation. But sometimes that happens. Sometimes one of the partners has a vendetta against the other one, and there is retaliation. So I want to address that in this module. And what we are going to do is we are going to refer to the guidebook. If you have not yet downloaded the worksheets, there is a link to in this module for the ones we are going to go over in this module. So I want to address ways to diagnose and recognize if you are dealing with a vendetta or retaliation. Sometimes we don't recognize it, and if we came out of an abusive marriage, what may appear normal really isn't. So I want to go over some of the things to recognize if there is retaliation. I also want to talk about how you can stay safe and also stay sane. I also want to address evidence. What is evidence? Evidence is proof. And how you can maintain evidence and records so that if you ever have to go to court, if you ever have to talk with your attorney, if you ever have to talk with law enforcement, you have evidence that there has been retaliation or there is a vendetta against you. And then we will also address a getaway plan. In the event that there is severe abuse or you feel as though you and or your children's life is in danger, I have several things that you can do as part of a getaway plan. So let's continue.
Retaliation comes in many forms, and sometimes it's hard to recognize it, especially if you've been in an abusive relationship for a long time. The signs may be very subtle, and even if they are overt, abuse may have become your normal. I have developed a checklist of behaviors that can clearly be defined as vindictive or retaliatory. We are going to go through them, and if you recognize one, a few, or even all of them, you can be assured that your ex is either developing or has a vendetta against you and that is acting in a retaliatory way. From there, I will continue in this module to talk about how you can keep yourself sane during a period of retaliation by your ex-spouse, or even if they are your soon-to-be ex-spouse. I also will address evidence should you have to go to court, and finally, a getaway plan in the event that you really have to keep you and possibly your children along with you safe. So let's start with retaliation and how to recognize it. The first thing is if your spouse won't leave you alone. I am not talking about if they send you a text in the morning asking you if you are taking your daughter to the doctor and you decide that you are not going to answer them and they email you four or five times during the day asking you the same question. That is not a vendetta and that is not retaliation. I'm talking about your spouse just won't leave you alone. You receive excessive texts, emails, phone calls, any other kind of contact. Emails that start in the morning, they go on all day, you get texts in the afternoon, at night, during your dinner. That would be considered excessive and something's going on. They may be trying to make contact with you, but if you notice that the flavor of the text or the emails start to get nasty, name calling, threats, you have somebody who's retaliating against you. If your spouse won't leave you alone and it continues beyond excessive texts, emails, and phone calls, and they are contacting your friends, your family, showing up at your work, you find them in the parking lot when you're grocery shopping. If they start to feel as they can ingratiate themselves into your life, you can be rest assured that you are being stalked. Your spouse has a vendetta against you. Maybe they are beginning a smear campaign against you. Whatever feels a little off, probably is correct because this is just too much in your life. If you walk out of the Whole Foods or you walk out of any supermarket and you see your ex sitting in a car leering at you, that's a little bizarre. So you will make a notation of that. We will talk about gathering evidence in a few moments. But that kind of behavior is something that you need to look out for. Another form of retaliation is your spouse makes co-parenting almost impossible. They will continually and consistently violate visitation times and dates. So if you are supposed to pick your children up on every other Sunday night at 6 o'clock and you come to pick them up from his house or apartment and the children aren't there and it's 10:30, 11, 12, the children aren't there, or you have an agreed upon pickup place and you show up, they're not there, and your ex calls you and tells you they're somewhere else. And this happens with consistency. They make co-parenting impossible to the extent that however you parent the children, they come in and go behind you and try to dismantle whatever behavior expectations you have put in place or any bedtime schedules. If they are making it impossible for you to co-parent with them, you can be assured that there's some kind of retaliation taking place. Another form of retaliation to recognize is that your spouse encourages your children to disrespect you. This means whatever you tell your children to do that's reasonable and customary, your spouse will come in and tell them they don't have to do it. They will encourage your children to be disrespectful to you, to use bad language towards you, maybe swear at you. So if you see that, you hear that, you know that that's a form of retaliation. They're using the children to hurt you. Another form of retaliation is that your spouse interferes with your ability to lead your own life. Now, this goes hand in hand with your spouse won't leave you alone. But in this particular scenario, your spouse keeps tabs on you, tries to find ways of like, what are you doing and how they can interfere with that. So in other words, if you are out with the children doing something that you had planned with them, maybe go to a movie, your spouse shows up. They're in the lobby of the movie theater, and then they come and they just sit with you. Or you are at a wedding, and they become a wedding crasher, and there they are, and, you know, dressed to the nines. Why? So if you notice that they are starting to interfere with your ability to lead your own life, you have retaliation. I had a lady once tell me that she was going on a date with a gentleman. This is about 6 months after her divorce, and the person picked her up and they went to a restaurant and they're having the meal. And during the meal, her ex-husband shows up at the table and starts trash talking her. This would be a perfect example of retaliation, how to recognize it. Your spouse interferes with your ability to lead your own life. Another form of retaliation is if your spouse begins to sabotage your relationships, such as with your family, your friends, but it goes further than that. Employers, your children's teachers, interaction with people at your job. So if you start to notice that, or if your boss calls you in and tells you your spouse wrote a letter about you and it's a smear campaign letter, something terrible about you, that's retaliation. It appears as though maybe your spouse wants to have you fired. Or if they start to ingratiate themselves with your family and friends and speaks badly of you, that would be a form of retaliation. Another form of retaliation is not paying child support or alimony. They just don't want to. They're angry with you for whatever reason, or they are just angry because they have to pay child support or alimony and they stop doing it. Or they don't completely stop doing it, but they start taking funds out of what you are supposed to receive. So for example, I met a woman once whose ex-husband, the day before she was supposed to receive her alimony and child support, he would send her an invoice of where he docked her from the child support and alimony. And literally it was an invoice. So whatever she was supposed to receive had a huge amount debited from it because he had docked her for misbehaving. And it was outrageous. It was things like she didn't answer a phone call, so he docked her $5. She didn't call him back after she didn't answer a phone call, and he docked her another $10. And so he was basically bleeding her of her child support and alimony because she wasn't behaving in a way that he wanted her to. And by the way, there was nothing in the divorce decree that required her to do anything of what he asked. And yet he took it upon himself to punish her for whatever it was that he wanted her to do that she didn't, and took it out of the child support and alimony. If you have something like that going on, there's definitely retaliation taking place. And finally, parental alienation. What better way to hurt you than to turn your children against you? There is an entire module in this program that is devoted to parental alienation. So if you feel as though your spouse is turning your children against you, saying bad things about you, your children want to spend less and less time with you, they make claims against you that are untrue, they feel justified to talk poorly about you and to you, you definitely have a retaliation taking place and you need to nip it in the bud. So take some time and listen to the module on parental alienation. There's a wealth of information about parental alienation, definitions, ways to recognize if you are being alienated from your children, and ways to diffuse parental alienation. So how can you keep yourself sane if you are being targeted? I say so many times that you cannot predict how a person is going to behave, and you surely cannot stop a person from behaving however they wish to behave. You can only respond a certain way, and you can only have control over what you do. So here you have somebody who's retaliating against you. They are showing up at your work. They're writing letters to your friends and family. They're posting negative things about you on Facebook, Instagram. They are sending you emails and texts. I mean, your life is just miserable. The person can't leave you alone. They won't leave you alone. So, of course, the question is, Susan, you tell me I can't control another person. Okay, I know that, but how on earth can I stop it? How on earth can I be sane through this whole process? Well, I want to address some of that, but before I do, I want to talk about people who do something like this, and at some point they stop. It's like very young children, bad behavior gets attention, even if they get punished, even if it's they have a timeout. Negative attention sometimes is better than no attention. But then there are times where you have to give no attention to something, and eventually the person who's doing it will stop. People don't do things unless they get a payback for it. So if your spouse or soon-to-be ex-spouse is sending you emails and swearing at you in front of the children and just doing awful things to you, the more you respond, you may actually escalate that behavior. On the other hand, if you ignore it, it still may not go away. And it really depends on the circumstances. It depends on the mental health of your ex-spouse. There are so many factors, and I could not list them all, and I don't know your particular situation. But I can give you some suggestions on how to keep yourself sane while you are being targeted. I can teach you ways to gather evidence should you ever have to go to court regarding any of the retaliation or vendetta that's been turned against towards you. And then also ways to be safe as far as a getaway plan should you have to flee. So let's start with number one. And this is what I want you to understand. You did nothing to deserve what's happening to you. No matter what the reason that your marriage did not turn out, even if you cheated on your spouse, even if you are the one who walked out of the marriage, no one has the right to impede you from having an authentic life. Nobody has the right to stalk you. Nobody has the right to try and completely destroy your life. Nobody has the right to send smear campaign letters to your family, your friends, your employers, your children's teachers. That's just not okay. So I want you to remember that, because what often happens is that people start to self-doubt. They start to wonder, well, what did I do? I must have done something. And unfortunately, the courts and sometimes lawyers and sometimes therapists, not all the times, but we know that oftentimes victims are actually further victimized by the professionals. There is a shred of, well, they must have done something. I want you to get out of the blaming mentality, because the minute you start to take blame for this, you will then become even more victimized. And everything we just talked about, all of the bullet points about retaliation comes in many forms and ways to recognize it, you will start to internalize those. And then you will start to accept them. And if you have been an abused spouse, you will actually internalize it more. So let me say this again. Always remember that you did nothing to deserve what is happening to you. Number two, if you recognize that your spouse has a vendetta against you, keep in mind that it's their issue. It's not yours, and it shouldn't be. That is their issue. For whatever reason, they either still want to be in contact with you, they still want to have some control over you. Even if they don't love you anymore, even if they don't want to be married to you, they still want to exert some kind of control over you. And sometimes people make the mistake of thinking, you know why he's doing this to me? He must still love me. He is so sorry that he cheated on me. He wants me back. Let me make this very clear. If somebody is remorseful, they feel like they made a terrible mistake, a huge lapse in judgment, and they really love you, they will come back and talk to you in a reasonable way, remorsefully, and ask for your forgiveness. They will not stalk you, email, threaten you, call you names, try to have you lose your job, alienate your children against you. So recognize, if your spouse is doing anything like this, that's not about loving you or missing you. They have a vendetta against you. They're angry. They want control over you, and they want to interfere with your life. So please keep in mind that the vendetta against you by your spouse is all about them. It is not about you. Number three, if you cannot ignore a particular situation, respond with as much reserve and calmness as possible. Do not argue with your spouse in front of children, in front of coworkers, or the police, or in front of a judge. If you have to scream and yell, go out into the country and scream to the wind. When you get home, go into your bathroom and where nobody can hear you and just rant in there. Do not respond to any crazy behavior that may be exhibited towards you with crazy behavior back, because insanity breeds insanity, and you don't want to appear as though something is wrong with you. You don't want to give the person the leeway to say, well, look at her or look at him. They're crazy. If your spouse is stalking you, threatening you, sending you emails and texts, if they're trying to destroy your reputation, that's tough. I understand that, and that's frustrating. Who wouldn't want to come after them and give them up an earful? But don't. Try to ignore it as much as you can. Number four, document everything. And when I say document everything, I mean everything. We will talk about this in just a few moments, but it's an exhausting, time-consuming endeavor. It is. But if you have to go to court for any reason regarding anything that your spouse is doing to you, you must have evidence. The judges don't want to sit there and have you scroll through your cell phone to find something that happened 6 months ago. And telling a judge that your ex did something, stalked you, sent you a letter, and you don't have dates and times, and you don't have evidence of the letters and texts, you will lose your case. So it's imperative that you document everything. And again, more on that in a few moments. Number five, notify the police if necessary. If your spouse is stalking you, let the police know. Take photographs of your spouse parked in front of your house at 2 a.m. if that's what they are doing. If you have a situation that you think is escalating and that is dangerous, take a few moments to visit the police department of your precinct. Speak to the captain, lieutenant, somebody in charge. Let them know of your particular situation and what some of your concerns are. There may also be, most jurisdictions have, a domestic abuse specialist. That usually is a police officer that specializes in domestic abuse. Sometimes they even have classes that are free that you can sign up for and take the classes. And they talk about the wheel of abuse and things that you may be encountering. And therefore, you not only have given the police a heads up that you may be in danger, but you also may get some resources from the police, which would be very helpful in a situation where you have somebody who's retaliating against you. So please let the police know of your concerns. And finally, and please listen to this, if you are in the car and your ex is pursuing you or your spouse is pursuing you in a chase, do not go to an end location. We as private investigators know that the second location is never where you want to be. So if your children are staying with your sister for the evening because it's movie night and they love their cousins, your sister's children, and they are away from home, and you went out with your girlfriends for dinner, and on your way home, your ex was in the car behind you because he stalked you at the restaurant and now he's following you home, do not go home. Listen to me again. Do not go home. Drive directly to the police station. Now, if you don't know where the police station is, call 911 and have a police officer meet you either at your house or wherever they tell you to meet. But do not go home, because going home alone, possibly in the dark, you are at a second location. And if your ex-spouse or spouse is angry, agitated, has had a few drinks, you're only asking for trouble. Again, it's not your fault, but I'm here not to talk about fault. I know this isn't your fault. I'm trying to teach you ways to keep yourself safe. And if you are being chased by your spouse or anybody for that matter, don't drive to the second location where they can hurt you. Go directly to the police department. In the guidebook, I have a sheet where you can jot down some information regarding shelters and women's safety groups. When you have some time, seek out some shelters and women's safety groups in your area. Note the name, the location, and their phone number, just in the event that you ever need it. Should your spouse become so dangerous that you don't know where to go, and going to your mother's or your sister's or brother's or a friend's just is not a great idea. You don't want to get them involved. You don't want them to be hurt. And you feel as though you have to go to a woman's shelter. You will already have that information at hand. The most frightening thing is to be in a car, either alone or with your children, trying to flee from someone and you have nowhere to go. True, you can drive directly to the nearest police station, but you also need to know of women's shelters where you can go and be safe. Your car can be parked in a safe location and you can be in a location where your spouse cannot get you. And if he or she has been drinking or is under the influence of drugs, or is just having a bad day, you want to have a place where you can be safe while they chill out. So now we've covered retaliation, how to recognize it, how to keep yourself sane. I want to talk about evidence. And if you've noticed, I have a slide up here, and it's also in the guidebook, on how to document all contentious offenses made by your spouse. As a private investigator and certified divorce coach, one of the most upsetting things that I've observed when I go into the courtroom with litigants and with divorce and even without divorce is when people come unprepared. Judges are very busy people. And when you go into the courtroom, whether it's for your divorce or in any capacity, if you go to court because your ex is in contempt of anything in the divorce decree or a safety matter, or should you need a protective order, you need your evidence. And I'm always amazed and alarmed and stunned at how many people go into the courtroom and they have a fantastic story. Their ex has done whatever it is that they've done. It's incredulous. It's outrageous. And then the judge asks for evidence. And they don't have it. And they lose their case. So what is evidence? That sounds like a really fancy word that you hear on courtroom shows. All evidence is proof. Evidence is proof of what claim you are making. So, for example, you go to court because your spouse is sending you threatening emails and texts. If you are making claims that your spouse is sending you threatening emails and texts, you need to show what those emails and texts look like. It doesn't matter if you have one or 1,000, bring them to court. And what will happen is if you make the claim, and of course you will make the claim, that your ex is sending you threatening texts or emails, and the judge said, "Oh, really?" You can hand the stack of emails to the bailiff. The bailiff will hand it to the judge, and the judge can have some eye candy right there, yes? Can look over all these emails and texts and see exactly what you were talking about. If you have one in particular, let's say your ex says to you in a text, "If you don't have the children at the house on time, you know I have a gun and I'm going to kill you." Make sure you have that one available. Don't stand in a courtroom and tell a judge, "He threatened to kill me with a gun," and the judge says, "Where was that?" And you go, "Well, it was in a text. I have it somewhere." Mm-mm. That's not going to fly. Your Honor, here's the text. Hand it to the bailiff. Bailiff hands it to the judge. And there it is. When you go to court, you want to be as organized as possible, and you want to have the evidence. Nothing irritates a judge more than litigants who stand in front of him or her floundering for the evidence that they filed a petition to be in the court to present. So if you have filed contempt against your ex, or you are filing for a protective order, and you walk in there without the evidence, your case gets closed. And too many people make the claims that the courts don't help them. The courts can only help you if you help yourself. So make sure you have the evidence. If, for example, your ex shows up at your house every night at 2 a.m. and is stalking you, take a picture. Photographs on cell phones, date and time. And then convert that into paper format, so that when you go to court, you do not have to zombie scroll through your phone to find something that happened 3 months ago. When you tell the judge, "Every night, the second week of May, my ex was parked in front of my house at 2 a.m. and I don't know why." And then you hand 7 photographs at various times over 7 days in a row where his car is parked right in front of your house. There's the evidence. It's irrefutable. When I talk about evidence, I mean proof that you can take to court that's irrefutable. Don't go to court unprepared. Is it exhausting to gather evidence? It really is. Is it time consuming? Absolutely. Is it a pain in the neck? You better believe it. But my suggestion is you take a file, or you get a hanging file box and you drop the hanging folder in there. And you make subfolders, texts, emails, photographs, Facebook entries he makes against me, whatever it is, so that when you go to court, if should you go to court, many times these do end up in court because people seek out protection orders or their spouse is in contempt, you have all the evidence right then and there. Now, you may say to me, you know, Susan, I'm so busy and I can't get around to it. I'll do it like once a month. Let me tell you what we PIs always say. Memories fade. And I remember as a careered private investigator, if events took place more than 3 months prior to the time I was taking a statement, we always took the information in that statement with a grain of salt because memories fade. So if I interviewed somebody about an incident and they said to me, well, it happened like a few months ago. How many months ago? I don't know. Let me see I don't know if the leaves were changed. I'm not quite sure. Right there, the date of the incident becomes very muddy. They're not sure. They don't know. I mean, if they could say something like, well, there was snow on the ground, I could at least assume it was winter. So what I'm saying is memories start to get very fuzzy. They get faded. Times and dates get murky. People don't know if something happened in the morning or night. And then what happens to your case? It goes out the window. Because when you have all this murky muddiness, you're not sure, the judge can't make a ruling on you're not sure. So you have to stay on top of it. I know it's a pain in the neck. I know it's a pain in the neck because as a private investigator and certified divorce coach, I've had to ask people to do it. And as a careered PI, I've had to do it. And I can tell you, if you go to court with all the evidence and accurate, laser sharp accuracy with dates and times, that really strengthens your case, especially if you have something that's going on that feels threatening to you. So make sure that you have the offense date, what the offense is, and some details. And I've helped you right here by giving you a sheet that gives you a guideline on how to do it. Also in the workbook, I give examples so that you know how to make notations. So if your spouse sends you an email, just saying to the judge, well, he sent me this really nasty email and he called me names and it was some time. I know it was in the fall because my daughter just started school. Big mistake, means nothing. But if you say to the judge, my ex sent me an email on September the 1st and it was dated at 9 a.m. and here's what it said. And by the way, here's the email. There's your credibility. So evidence, evidence, evidence. I say it a lot because I know that this is the piece that you need when you go to court. I mean, think about it. You're going to court in front of a judge to make a decision to keep you safe. You need to come in with the proof of what you're saying is true. How do they know you're not making it up? Just because you walk into a courtroom and you say, oh, my ex-husband is threatening me and he's sending me nasty emails. Well, I don't have any of them with me. Well, what good is that? So make sure that any evidence that you claim you have, you bring with you and bring it organized. And believe me, judges have no problems if you walk in with a little hanging folder with these very organized hanging folders, even with subdivided folders. They really appreciate that. You save them time and they get much less aggravated with your case. And then they also see you as an organized person. You're not there for fun and games. You're really concerned about your safety, your children's safety. You've had enough with the shenanigans. And you know what? Let's get this ball rolling. Let's get you safe. So when you come in clear-minded, organized, the judges will appreciate that. And you will be many steps closer to being safe. And your ex will be many more steps closer to being reprimanded for doing what's being done. The last piece of this module on retaliation, keeping yourself sane, keeping yourself safe, gathering evidence, is about getaway plans. Getaway plans sound really scary, don't they? I know they do. But you need a getaway plan. And if you are dealing with somebody who's retaliating against you, who's threatening you, has harmed you or hurt you or the children, you need a getaway plan. The getaway plan I have is one that I've discussed with many police officers and law officials, and they absolutely love it and endorse it because it really will enable you to leave an unsafe situation and be okay for a few days. Nothing is more harrowing than running out of the house in the middle of the night with two children in their pajamas, dropping them in the car, and then you go, now what? Next morning, you want to take them to school, and all you have are their pajamas, their clothes are back at your house. You don't know if your spouse is there, angry, waiting with a gun, or wants to hurt you, or wants to make a scene, and now you don't know what to do. So you really have to have a getaway plan. And so what I've devised are some items, aside from your registration and insurance information, that should be in your car at all times in the event that you have to leave your house. So let's start with the first one, which is really important, and that is to keep your gas tank at least half full, if not more, of gas at all times. I know that's a tall order. I can't tell you how many times when I was going through my divorce that I pulled into a gas station on fumes. And I'm sure you have too. But you can't do that. Because if you have to at any time flee, you have to be assured that you have gas in your car. And if your ex follows you from point A to point B and you have the children in the car, you really don't have time to pull over and get gas. So as basic as this sounds, it's really extremely helpful. Just treat the half mark on your gas dial as being empty. And just always keep it at least half full. Pack an overnight bag for you and your children. And this overnight bag should include 3 days worth of clothes, toiletries, and all necessary medications. In other words, pack as though you and the children are taking a 3-day trip. And just keep that in the car. Because if you ever have to take the children out in the middle of the night and they're in their pajamas, what is going to happen the next morning? You don't have any clothes. And is it safe for you to go back to the house? And if it's not, they are now in their pajamas. So toiletries, toothbrush, toothpaste, shampoo, conditioner, moisturizer, and any necessary medications. If your children have an EpiPen or allergy medication, even things like Tylenol, get them in the toiletry bag and put this in your trunk of the car. Keep all passports in a safe place. And what I mean by that is, if you have the children and your passport, do not leave them in the house. I had a client tell me a few months ago that she came home from work and her ex-husband had ransacked her house, torn it to shreds to look for, as he was looking for the passports, and he found them. And that was it. He had the kids' passports. And her biggest fear, the reason she called me, is her biggest fear was, now what am I going to do? He can take these children and take them out of the country. So if you have your passport and the children's passport, put them in a safe deposit box at the bank. You can get a tiny one for maybe $50, $60, whatever it is. Get that passport in there and then put the key somewhere very safe. If you can't get a safe deposit box at the bank, give it to your best friend or your parent. Give it to a trustworthy person, but do not leave it anywhere in your house. The next suggestion is to have a plan for your pets in the event that you need to flee for safety. I can't tell you how awful it is for police officers to go into homes and find pets that are left behind. Somebody had to flee for fear of a spouse, and now there's dogs and cats, feces, urine all over the house. Food and water bowls are empty. That's not fair. And some people can put the dog and the cat in the car and take them with them. That's fantastic if you can do that. But if you can't, don't leave those pets behind. Once you flee, contact your support person, your mother, your father, your sister, brother, best friend, whoever it is. Give them, make sure they have a key to your house and they can go in and get those animals out of there. Nobody says that they have to take your dog and cats and fish or hedgehog or gecko. Take them to the vet. Board them, but get them out of unsafe territory. Because even if your spouse isn't hurting them, They're unsafe. They're being neglected. They're starving. So make sure you have a getaway plan for them too. Keep $200 of available cash hidden somewhere in your car. That makes sense. So you have extra cash. You may have cash in your purse, in your handbag, in your wallet when you leave, but you may not. Make sure you have this emergency $200 in the car. Another thing that you must have in your getaway bag is a credit and or debit card that has at least $500 to $1,000 available on one or both of them. This is in the event that you have to go to a hotel, that you need to put extra gas in your car, you need to get food, you need to have some money either on a credit card, debit card that you have access to while you are in this getaway mode. Make sure you have a jug of fresh water, flares, and blankets in your car. Always have some fresh water. If it's a six-pack of water bottles, if it's a jug, whatever it is, have fresh water in the car. Have some flares and definitely have some blankets if you are in, especially if you live in a cold area, even if you live in a warm climate, Florida, for example, Southern Texas, Southern California, it gets chilly at night. And if you're fleeing at night with two little kids, you're going to hear them say, "I'm cold." You'll have if you have a blanket or two, make sure that that's part of your getaway bag. Also, if you live in a cold climate, by all means, make sure you have like a comforter in the car or a heavy blanket because it will get very cold if you have to stay in the car for any period of time, even with the heat on. So make sure you have those blankets. And lastly, some non-perishable snacks for the children. Keep some granola bars, something like that. In the car, I mean, obviously you want to rotate them out after a few months and put fresh ones in there, but something so that while you're driving or if you're trying to get out of dangerous territory or what may be perceived as dangerous territory, and the kids, you know how it is, I'm hungry, you have some snacks in the car. So please take a few moments one day when the kids are at school or Saturday morning or a day that they're not home. Put together toiletry bag, overnight bag with clothing for you and the children, extra money, debit credit cards. Make sure the passport is in a safe place, not your home. A plan for your animals so that your car is the perfect getaway vehicle. I want to close this module with, please give a key to your house, a key to your car to a trusted person. Also give them the names of your children's pediatrician, your doctor, children's therapist, police officer, your attorney, so that they have this information should they be concerned about you, if they think you're in danger. Also, have some kind of checkpoint. The worst thing for a parent is to know that they have a child who's being stalked, abused, tortured by their ex-spouse, and their child takes off not only themselves, but takes off with the grandkids. The parent has no idea where they are or if they're safe. So please keep that connection. Does not mean you have to get on the phone with them and give them the gory details. Just let them know that you are safe. It's essential to have a support system, somebody that knows where you are. It's important that you have a relationship with the police officers, that you keep everybody informed in the mix, that you have a great getaway plan. More importantly, always know that you did nothing wrong. Anytime somebody retaliates against you, it is their issue, not yours. Please don't internalize this, and please keep safe.